Sinking in.
Sinking in. Three.
Two. One. Dan Merchant.
Dan Merchant. He's the best.
Let me know when I say Dan Merchant.
Whenever you want.
No, we just...
Dan Merchant.
There we go. Yeah.
Good job.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Fascinating Podcast. I'm J.R. Forresteros.
I'm Matt Michelotis.
And it's just us today.
Yeah, it's an extra. So we this was kind of a last minute thing. I asked the team if they were available with less than 24 hours warning. So,
and it's not a Sunday, so I was.
Yeah, J.R. was able to move some things around to be available, which is great. So on this week's show, we're going to be talking to Dan Merchant, who is the creator of a show called Going Home, which happens to be the show that was my first show in the writer's room.
Woo-woo.
So pretty fun. And Dan's an old friend.
You're going to hear a lot about how a TV show gets made, but then you're also going to hear a lot about this specific TV show and how it tackles a surprising topic, I think with a lot of grace and humanity. So you're going to love it. We love Dan. Dan's great. It's always fun to talk to him. So... but before that, Matt, I quizzed you on last week's episode, so I feel like you're here to return the favor.
I am. JR, if you had to guess, how large do you think the world's largest plant is, and how old do you think it is?
Okay, so I'm going to be that guy and guess like one of those redwoods in California that's like, I don't know, 800 years old.
So close. The world's largest plant is actually in the ocean off the Australia coast.
What?
It's a seagrass meadow that has been repeatedly cloning itself. So asexual reproduction for 4,500 years. And it is 70 square miles big.
I was really close.
<You're pretty>
Okay, so hang on now.
Yeah.
4,500 years. This means that it was born. Do we say plants are born?
I don't know. It was grown.
It emerged for the first time when the pyramids were being built.
That's right. And it's larger than the state of Washington.
Which is not as big as Texas, but still no slouch.
That's right. It's gigantic. And they don't know. It may have been larger in the past.
Who knows? Closer to Jesus, anything Jesus did in his earthly life, cleansing the temple, loaves and fishes, any of the highlights that you know about, than Jesus was to when this plant was born.
Yes. And it's really fascinating. Evolutionary biologists are the ones that first started studying it because they were saying they couldn't find any diversity in this seagrass.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Which you would expect, right? Like that as the seagrass intermingles with other seagrass, even is interpollinated, you should see that the offshoots have slightly different genetic markers. Well, this seagrass all has identical markers. None. Yeah, and this is recent that they discovered. So they went all throughout it. They were pulling different things, checked the genetics, identical throughout. So they're baffled by it. They're like, it's really amazing that for 4,500 years, as near as they can tell, roughly, right? So 4,000 to 4,500
years. I mean, did they find its journal? Like, how do they know?
I'm not sure how exactly the that goes, except that I think they're comparing it to modern plants that they know have transformed over certain amounts of time.
So, is it like a tree when you really cut the tree down and it has the rings? They're just like micro rings?
I'm honestly not certain how they came up with the number. But yeah, pretty amazing. I was shocked, actually, when I was reading about
this. Are you aware, Matt, that I have a patch of grass in my backyard that is 5,500 years old, as near as I can tell?
I did not know that. You should let the people of the scientific community know that.
As near as I can tell, right? I'm not, you know... I'm not really.
That's what the grass says.
I'm not very good at aging grass, if I'm being honest.
Amazing.
All right. Well, our listeners may remember Dan as one of the writer, producers, and directors of Z Nation. We had him on the show way back in the day to talk about that. He's the one that invited us out to the set of Z Nation and set us up to interview George R. R. Martin and all of that. He directed a film. I think I first became aware of him through Lord Save Me From Your Followers, which was his film that he, a documentary that he directed. Is that also where you first encountered him?
Yeah. So when Lord Save Us From Your Followers came out, I was writing for a magazine called The Wittenberg Door, which no longer exists. And I said, hey, could I go interview this guy? And we could run it in the magazine. They were like, sure. And he lived in Portland. So I ran over to meet him and I did the interview and we hit it off and just had a great time. And they scheduled the interview for the magazine's issue that ended up being its would have been its last issue if they had released it. They didn't even release it. So Dan and I did this interview and he gave me, I don't know, a couple hours of his time and it ended up not even running. But we kind of just became buddies from there. But yeah, that was right.
So there's a lost Dan Merchant interview by Matt Michelotis.
I'm sure I have it somewhere. That's actually funny. I should pull that up.
And, you totally should. Because that would have been the first time of many now that you've interviewed him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I had no idea. I mean, we enjoyed hanging out and talking, but I didn't know this was going to be a multi-decade friendship either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty funny.
Well, Dan, I love talking to him, and you'll hear him use the metaphor of like a coach, you know, or a quarterback or something like that. He's just so good at that, at leading people, at creating really, and I use this word in the best way possible, like wholesome spaces for people to work together and flourish. I'm excited about this show, and I'm even more excited now having gotten to hear both of you talk about it. So let's hop over to our interview with the one, the only, the great, and the not yet late Dan Merchant.
Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Matt, JR, you guys.
It's been, I think, since 2015 since we've had you on, which it feels like that makes us bad friends, and I apologize.
Wow.
No, and I think I owe you a quote for your book that came out 4 years ago, too.
So ooh, okay.
I think we're in even territory.
All right.
And since you guys came out to the set in Spokane for Z Nation, where my writing studio is to this very day.
Amazing. Yes.
Speaking of which, Dan, what is the... Yeah, so the last time we talked to you, you were eyeball deep in producing Z Nation, writing, directing, producing, and what's new?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we had a pandemic that sort of shut everything down for a couple of years, and then on the other side of that, we've got this great new show, Going Home, that's debuting on PureFlix June 2nd, today when we're taping this. I don't know when your project airs here, but we're super excited to be in this world. A premiere in the streaming age is so great because it's not like, oh, you missed it. It was Friday night at 8. Oh, shoot. Well, there's another episode next week. Like with Z Nation, it was like a train that just kept going by, you know, Sci-Fi Channel, whatever, Friday night at 9 or whatever we were. If you missed it, you missed it, you know, and right. Then eventually it shows up on Netflix. But with PureFlix and Going Home, it's like, well, the first two episodes drop today and they'll be there. And when you get around to it, you can watch it. And if you want to wait till episode, you know, 4, 5, 6, you know, which I think are just amazing, wonderful episodes. I'm so pleased with the arc of the whole season, a 6-episode season. We'll pick us up in late June and you see them all, you know. And so the sort of the pressure to promote and the pressure to go, it's on PureFlix today, is what it used to be, you know. So
nice. Thanks
for streaming, and the Lord's really blessed this with this video on demand miracle.
So I'm curious then, given, is this your first show that has released onto streaming that you've been that you've been involved in? Okay.
Yeah, it is. Well, I guess technically Black Summer went to Netflix first.
Okay, that, you're right.
That was direct to Netflix show, but that one I was just a kind of a writer contributor, and that one was really a Carl Schaefer, John Hyams, Abram Cox special. Three of the Z Nation alumni and big leaders on that Z Nation team that was so much fun to work with. But yeah, for me personally, this is the first show that, you know, I've created, show run, you know, whatever, that goes straight to streaming. So that is my first experience in this new world.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I got to go be on set for a week and watch Dan.
Wait, why, Matt?
Well, as everyone already knows, because I've been telling him forever.
Good.
Dan invited me to be one of the writers in the writer's room for this show. So, and then he invited me out to set, which he didn't have to do, but it was really nice. And it was super fun watching Dan. Dan's, you know, I think there's a bunch of people out there that are probably good writers or good at different pieces of things, but Dan's really amazing at all of it and like a good leader. And he takes care of people and is like watching over them and cares about their feelings and all sorts. It's not what I was told being on set was like by other people.
Well, so, yeah. Thank you, really, Matt. Cool. And I don't want to interrupt the compliment flow because I'll let you get back to it. But it was really, this was a special show. There was something about going home that I think because of the material and because of the actors that we brought in, and I had relationship with a lot of the crew. A lot of the crew were Z Nation people, or Doug Hostetter, the director of photography, you know, is a veteran filmmaker who I happened to go to college with. So I'd known Doug forever and a day. And so it was a really interesting blend of people, but I was so amazed with how respectful and how hardworking the crew were to give the actors the room, because it's pretty emotional territory to do this show about that. You know, it's about death, but it's hopeful and cathartic and it's full of love and it's a very beautiful show. And it was just wonderful the way the crew made that environment possible, really, because we were leaning on the actors heavy and they created the space that allowed us to get the best from the actors. So it really was, what you're saying is true. I think it was a very special feeling on set. And that was because we had partnership from kind of everybody on the crew and everybody in the cast. It was powerful.
Yeah. Well, and even like Cynthia Geary, who plays the main character, you know, you could have the main actor come in and kind of be a diva or something like that. But she was just really kind and friendly to everyone, seemed really generous. I was texting her this morning. I was just like, congratulations, your show's out. And she sent me this long, like long text about the episodes I wrote and what she loved about each one. I was you were just supposed to say thank you. That's fine.
Like, she's a beautiful human being. She
really
is.
She's
a wonderful person, a tremendous talent, very experienced actor. And it was so weird how she was meant to be Charlie, and just so many things that she brought to that role, were unexpected. She's really generous, going, oh, it was all on the page. I'm like,
yeah,
it's not. I'm happy to take the compliment, of course, and so is Matt and Kara. You know, we bled onto the page for this show, but wow, just some of the
stuff. She brought more, she brought it to life.
And Charisma Carpenter, who plays her friend Catherine, there's a lot that people brought to this show that everybody just kind of caught into the leave it all on the field spirit of it. And Cynthia's leadership in being willing to, we shot 10, 11 pages a day, which is a lot, and particularly for emotionally demanding material.
So Dan, what would be typical, like on a regular show, what would be ordinary?
Well, on a network show, it might be 3, 4, 5 pages a day or something like that for a single camera kind of project. Feature films might be 2 pages a day, depending. Z Nation, you know, we were 5, 6, 7 on Z Nation, but you know, there's more action and things like that. And that show was insane about how fast we shot that one too. So we really did design this show because of how much it was about the performances for the actors. We really did design it so that we spent our time working with the actors and shooting the things, as opposed to doing big set pieces or moving the camera around a lot, or we got to have five locations. There's a lot of scenes that take place at the nurse's station or at the passages room or in the hospice, you know, client room or something. And you know, we keep it in close-ups and we keep it, it's a very intimate show in that respect. And that lends itself to being able to spend your time acting and shooting and not moving, you know, not moving lights and setting the equipment up over and over and over, which is of course part of production. And so I think we were really thoughtful about, well, if we were going to ask this of the actors, how do we make it possible for them to have success and to give us their best? And the plan with Rich Cowan, the producer, that he and I kind of came up with, well, I think this is how we can do it. And then you work with each department and you work with Doug in the camera department and as the director of photography and go, all right, here's how fast we can move and here's how we're going to capture. You know, I say, here's what's important. And then we all figure out together how to best capture that. And I could sit here and talk all day about Cynthia Geary and what a beautiful job on the show. It's really, people will be surprised that the show is as beautiful and powerful as it is. I think they'll be surprised it's is accessible. I mean, you know, from being on the set, how many people came up and told you their stories about loved ones that died? It's like, it's the most relatable show we've ever done on accident.
Yeah. Well, and I think, yeah, it's really interesting. Like, obviously, PureFlix has targeted Christians as their primary audience. But a bunch of the people who are working on the show were not necessarily from the same spiritual background and were really affected by it and really moved by it. I think they're really beautiful things. And I had a lot of conversations in my week on set with people who were telling me, yeah, about their loved ones who had passed or, you know, why the show was meaningful to them, which I was actually a little surprised by.
Yeah. Again, most relatable show I've ever worked on completely by accident.
Well, so obviously the show's just out. It's not even all out by the time this is released. So we don't want to do major spoilers or anything. But you kind of mentioned some of the themes of the show. But Matt hasn't even really, for our listeners, given us like a lot of info, you know, because he was trying to, he told me you had some kind of draconian NDAs that you made him sign with lots and lots of threats and intimidation. So now that it's,
a Black Ops sniper shadowing his daughters. So
yeah, I've been calling the show Blue Harvest. I didn't want anyone to know.
As per the agreement. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So now that we know, now that we can talk about Going Home, Dan, tell us a little, just, you know, what is this show about? Like, what's the arc of the season that you mentioned? What's the kind of the heart of the show?
Sure. Excellent. Yeah. From the beginning, premiering on PureFlix, June 2nd. It's called Going Home. It's called Going Home. It's about a hospice nurse named Charlie Copeland. And essentially the job of a hospice nurse is to provide for the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of the dying. And so what we've got in a way is a very unique nurse's show, because this is not about get me 20 cc's of morphine stat, we've got to save this patient. We already know the patient, the client, as they call them in hospice, well, they're going to die. That's not what the show's about, whether we can save them or not. What it's about is preparing for what the hospice nurses call a good death. And what we learned from the hospice nurses in our research in the writer's room, and, you know, Matt has had his experiences, and Kara, one of the other writers, and myself have all had our experiences with death and with hospice and whatnot. And then we went and, you know, I went and researched with the hospice of Spokane to go, hey, are we close on this? This is kind of what we think it is. And are we close? And we were pretty close, but they gave us a lot of great insights. One of those insights is that death is not the opposite of life. It's part of the journey of life. And that hit me as really profound, because that's a big camera angle shift. It's like, oh, right. Death isn't failure like it would be in the emergency room for Charlie Copeland in the hospice scenario of Going Home at Sunset House, they call it. It's about how do we provide for this good death. And in a way, and this is kind of the way I pitched it to Sony, is it's an existential detective story, if you will. Charlie's the detective. Here comes the family. One of them's in a wheelchair or in a bed. What do they need? What can I give them? And we really worked hard in the room with Matt and Kara to come up with a variety of scenarios where it's not always the person in the bed who's going to leave this mortal coil that needs the thing from Charlie or the other nurses. And I think that's a very interesting thing. And lastly, one of the other algorithms that we learned was the amount of baggage between the people is equal to the amount of painful grief after they leave. So the more you clean up your relationships and the conflicts you have, the easier it'll be. It's a gift to those left behind if you can work out that apology, if you can acknowledge that thing, if you all those conversations we avoid and we don't want to have, which is, I think, partly why we are in denial. I'm in denial about death, because if I acknowledge that, then that reminds me I've got to clean up my side of the street before I go. And that's hard. And we avoid that instinctively. So those are some of the kind of the big themes in going home. And it's all couched in the through the filter, I guess, of this character, Charlie Copeland, that Cynthia Geary plays, who is a person of faith. But it's a more of a show me, don't tell me kind of person. Although she concludes every episode sitting on her porch, kind of decompressing after the day, talking to the sunset, virtually having a conversation with God about it. And we even kind of play the pauses and the cutaway shots to the sun where she's getting her responses. And she's very charming in those scenes. Anyway, that's I'll talk more about that later, because I remember Matt was one of the first people I talked to about that idea. But that's going home. Going home is you're going to meet a variety of people. Their circumstances are all different, just as the hospice nurse has taught us. Just like every life is different, every death is different. And the superpower that the hospice nurse seems to have, and certainly Charlie does, and Cozy Zulsdorf from Dolphin's Tale plays Janie, who's the rookie who we meet in the first episode. And she's trying to learn how this is, but the idea of being present is the superpower. How do you be present? And we wrote a little device in where Charlie, when she enters the room, grabs the door handle, pauses, takes a private moment. We don't even know what. Is she saying a prayer? Or is she just gathering herself? We're not even specific about it. But she takes that moment to gather herself, to kind of leave herself at the door, so that when she enters the room of the client with the family, she can be fully present. And it's not that hard to see what people need when you take yourself out of the picture. And I think that's a powerful lesson and an interesting truth about how we interact with each other that Charlie demonstrates. And, you know, if you've ever met somebody who, how do they always seem to know the right thing or do the right thing? And that was my experience with hospice nurses. It's like, because it ain't about them. they're there observing, and it's not that hard when you take yourself out. How do I look? How do I sound? What do they think about me? How do they, you know, if we can take ourselves out of it and be present for those who have a need, then it's not that hard to see it. And so that's a thing that is profoundly demonstrated in this show. Matt, anything you'd add to what we were trying to do, or kind of the world we set up?
Well, I think the other piece, right, is we wanted it to be a really personal journey for Charlie. So this is her world. This is where she lives. But it's not a major spoiler, right, to say what is the engine there in the first episode in the pilot.
Yeah, you meet Catherine. You're talking about Catherine and that.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's good. And that's it. One of the things that we do is we show you this person who has a calling, Charlie, and she does a difficult thing beautifully and really well in the service of others. And then, as sometimes happen, and she feels like she's being faithful to the assignment that God has given her, the calling that God's given her. And then like happens, a new season starts to begin, and then that messes up with what she thought she was supposed to be doing. And then it gets particularly personal for her. And that, I think, is a really interesting facet to the journey. That's kind of what you're alluding to, Matt.
Yeah, I think we bring in, this old friend, right, who comes in that there's interpersonal issues for them to work through. So in some way, she's going through, well, in a very exact way, she's going through a similar thing she's putting her patients through.
Yeah.
Which is dealing with her own issues in this relationship, which is really beautiful. And these two women did an amazing job throughout the show of kind of showing us this old friendship and repairing the walls where they're broken, which I thought was really cool.
It was really neat to put Cynthia Geary, who people know from Northern Exposure, and Charisma Carpenter, that people would know from Angel and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So a couple of big 90s, you know, network stars.
Yeah.
Doing some serious acting. And it was really neat. Charisma has a great interview that ran in the Boston Herald yesterday talking about how this show was a real different challenge for her. And, you know, she's been a, you know, beautiful, famous actress for, you know, 25 years or something. And then for her to, you know, her character is dying. And
yeah,
she doesn't look like the, as she says in the Boston Herald piece, she's not the, you know, the hot lawyer or the trophy wife to the millionaire kind right. of thing. She's not trading on her looks. She's really relying on her acting chops, which are considerable. And yeah. It was really amazing to see. How it was just real. It almost felt like, you know, even when I'm directing, I felt like I was being a voyeur to these two old girlfriends kind of working out their business. And, oh, it's like, ooh, that was a little mean that she said that. Or, oh, there's little things. And it's so real how they...
You're like, why did I write that?
Yeah.
Why did I make her say that?
That I know it exactly. And it's so funny how realistic they were, though. They were wonderful together and just worked so hard because it was it's a lot of pages. But I was so proud and impressed by Charisma being willing, you know, to shed her ace card, which is her looks, and go, this is going to be about how well I can connect and communicate, you know, this character. And it was wonderful.
It's really awesome. Yeah, it was amazing. So how did you come up with this, Dan? It seems like you were just driving down the road and you were like, we need a hospice show. Like, where did this come from?
Yeah, pretty close. we've talked about this a little bit, and you know, being a big, I'm a big Beatles guy. I'm a big music guy, and I was always fascinated that Paul McCartney woke up humming the melody to Yesterday. You know, the most recorded song in the history of recorded music. Yesterday, he dreams it, wakes up, da 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 da. Literally, it's called Scrambled Eggs. Because he's sitting down having breakfast and hears scrambled eggs and he's adding these words to this melody. And he's pretty sure that it came, you know, he didn't think it up. It just was there. And I've had the experience a handful of times where one minute the idea is not there, the next minute it's there. And that's what happened with Going Home. It was just, oh, and obviously we're in the midst of the pandemic. I'm watching the news and seeing the death count on there. I'm thinking about death more. My father is going through a cancer journey and I lost my mom to cancer, you know, years ago too. And it just sort of gets thinking. And for some reason, you know, I got this idea and then I started remembering all these encounters with the hospice nurses, with my grandparents and my parents and just going, how did they always know what to say and do? And how are they not scared of death? They're the only ones that are probably doing okay right now that we got to turn on the news and see the ticker going for how many people COVID got this week. They're handling it better than I am, I know. And that just kind of got me thinking about it. And then I realized, you know, I haven't seen this show. I haven't seen a show set in this environment. And, you know, as you guys know a little bit, it's like with going back to the Lord Save Us days, it's like, I'm not sure we're doing this right. Let's have an investigation about faith and culture, you know? So it's not like I'm always picking the mainstream idea. That's what was great about Z Nation. Zombie shows, they're already popular. I'll jump on one of those. Great. Thanks, Carl, for the call, you know?
Great.
But this one, it's like, oh yeah, great. A show about death during a pandemic. Real smart, Dan, real smart. But it just, I don't know. Something just kind of bubbled up. And as they, what do they say about, you know, the idea the blossoming, right? And then the more stories I remembered about the hospice nurses that I'd interacted with and how impressed I was, and I started to single out commonalities and went, oh, wow. And the kind of figured out the present thing, you know, it's like, oh, it's because they're the only one in the room without a stake. But yeah, how did they manage that? And how did they not get so scared by death? Oh, well, they've seen more of it. Oh, that's interesting. And you kind of just start going from there. And then started adding these other elements to it. And then I think before I pitched Sony, I think I just had Matt on the phone one day and kind of bounced it off him and you know, your reaction was pretty positive and pretty strong. And I had this element that I was kicking around, and I wasn't sure if it was too overt or too weird or whatever. And I said, yeah, I have this thing, because I was telling you about the sunsets that I would sit on my deck in Spokane after coming home from Z Nation and kind of meditate and pray and just kind of have a little personal time. And there was just something profound about it as the sun was setting on the day. And, you know, the sun is this beautiful, powerful manifestation of God's natural world. And it's a very spiritual thing for me. And I went, yeah, I'm thinking about having this character come home from the hospice thing and kind of like decompress. And I think she talked to him out loud, but maybe that's corny. I don't know. And then Matt goes, oh, you mean like Mork from Ork when he talks to Orson? And I laughed really hard and I go, oh crap, it's exactly like that. And then I went, you know what? This show is a really mainstream show. It just doesn't look like it is.
Right.
And that was a really nice encouragement and reinforcement. And when, yeah, you know what? That's a nice bookend to the show. And you can kind of, you reveal stuff about the character. And then in the execution of the show, it was really neat because Charlie's a pretty focused, all business sort of personality. And some people think she's a little prickly. And certainly, you know, we created Janie to be just this bubbly, hyperactive puppy dog of enthusiasm. And next to her, it's a real yin yang thing, the Janie Charlie thing. But then when we see Charlie at home interacting with God, her closest relationship, she sounds very different. And she's much more relaxed and she's much more emotive and she's much. So I thought that was a very interesting way to reveal character in a not obvious way. But you get, if you're patient and you sit and you watch the show, it's I feel like it's a show that rewards you for trying to understand how human beings work and operate and kind of just how we all are. And I think it ends up being a really relatable show. But anyway, that's in a nutshell kind of the process of coming up with the show. And then of course, you know, Rich Peluso at Sony Affirm, you know, was very positive and really liked the idea. And so, okay, so let me flesh it out a little more. And it came really quickly, I think, because there was a lot of clarity about the themes and the conversations that would be inherent in that environment. And in a way, it's like, everybody's complete life story up to nearly the end is what you got to work with in each episode, where, you know, so like in episode one, you've got Tyler Cobb and Harry Cobb, Tyler, a former NFL player. So we have a handsome, studly, you know, NFL all-star is the first guy who's going to come into your show. So that's not what you expect about a hospice show necessarily.
Right.
And really it's a father-son reconciliation episode, which is powerful. And then with Tom Skerritt and Sharva Maynard, two Seattle actors now, and Skerritt, of course, from Alien and Top Gun and, you know, a million great movies, MASH and Harold and Maude and whatnot. So then that's the story about, not to spoil it, because you can watch it right now on PureFlix. it's a story about a loving husband and wife, and the wife is prepared to go and she's okay. And it turns out that that's not who needs Charlie. It's Tom's character, Vance, who's kind of on the doorstep of dementia. And he's, you know, he's the reason the wife doesn't want to pass on. She's ready to see what heaven is. She's all good, but she's worried about her husband. And so when Charlie is able to step in and kind of help provide some support in that way, it's a very different kind of thing. And so it helps acknowledge the way families work through the passing of the person as much as the person who's about to shuffle off the mortal coil. So I think that's where the show has a lot more dimension. It's very hopeful. It's a very tender show. I like it when people, as they do now, describe it as it's a beautiful show. And I love to have made a beautiful thing.
People could think it's depressing. Go ahead, Jer.
Oh no. I want to change the subject just a hair.
Go for it. Change it.
No. I want to hear what you had to say.
Just going to say, I think people could hear the pitch of the show and go like, oh, it sounds a little depressing, but it's not actually at all. Like, it's really moving and beautiful, and it's actually life affirming. It's not like, oh, you're going to die. It's you're alive now. What are you doing with it?
No, I think that's different. I think that's great. And I think one of my hopes for the show is particularly when you see some of the reconciliations and some of the understanding and compassion between the characters who are working through hardships. I think that what it can remind us of is, you know, I'm not on my deathbed at this minute. I don't have that perspective, but I still have those messes to clean up. And if I clean them up, maybe I get 20 years of wonderful relationship with those people, you know, that person, whoever it is, whatever your thing might be. And it's like, what a blessing that would be. I mean, I really hope going home can share that encouragement. And look, people are a mess. Families are difficult. Relationships are hard. It's all of this is true. Let's not pretend that it's not true. But, you know, as the therapists say, it's like, well, sometimes the only way to get through something is to go through it. And just in the same way that death is as inevitable as gravity, it's like, it hurts me none to accept that. And it helps my perspective a little bit. And it reminds me, as you said beautifully a minute ago, to go, well, how do I live fully and completely in this space? And if you're a person of faith, it's like, what does God have for me to be doing with this day? You know, and I'm not promised tomorrow even. Right.
Yeah.
So I think all those things they should be encouraging and not depressing. And as we learn from the show too, that a full life is not a chronological measurement. It's what we did with this time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing that's pretty powerful and encouraging to people.
So you already mentioned the Tom Skerritt episode, which I'm super jazzed for. One, because it's Tom Skerritt. Two, because my understanding is that one was written by our own Matt Michaelatis. So I wondered if... No, it was not.
He's
that was just the one.
Yeah, but look, the right Matt and Kara and I, we bled over all the scripts. So there's stuff that Matt and Kara have that's in episode one, even though I'm the one who's the credited writer and I sat and did the typing on that one. But it was just this fantastic energy kind of in the writer's room, and everybody's contributing ideas and shadings. And I like that idea. And here's the thing that I know and things like that. So it's a tricky thing about credit. Cause look, television is a total team sport, and somebody's got to be the captain or the quarterback or whatever, the coach. So that's me.
The owner.
Somebody's got to get, the owner. Yeah. No, that's Pluto at Sony. He's the owner.
That's right. He's the owner.
So you got to have that. So anyway, so Matt comes in. Matt's credited on 3 and 4, but fingerprints on all of it.
Yeah. So Matt, tell us a little bit about, this is your first television show.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like to be in a writer's room for the first time. Tell us from your perspective.
I mean, it was great being with Dan, because Dan and I have been friends for a long time. So there wasn't any of the, like, I think there could have been a lot of weird emotion in another room where I didn't really know the people, but there was nothing weird emotionally at all. And Dan and Kara both were so generous and kind through the whole process. And the room, the way Dan led it, there was a lot of sharing of our personal experiences, which is some of what we're mining for the show, right? So Dan and I were crying like every single day in the writer's room, and Kara was keeping track of how many times we cried. Like, I think she might have cried once, but like every day she's like, that's 3.
Oh, she's sitting there doing this.
Yeah, she's making numbers like, with her fingers.
Yeah, I know. That was
awesome. We did it all online. So yeah, like Dan was saying, we all worked together on this. It was Dan's story and vision. So he has the final call on everything for sure. And he's the originator of it. So we would throw stuff out and Dan would help us like pick which things he thought could work and help make a shape to it. And then we all talked together about every episode. And then Dan assigned which episodes each of us would do the first draft on. And then Dan went through and fixed everything. I mean, that's just reality. And that's the showrunner's job. That's what he's meant to do. But throughout, Dan was super, super generous. And we all showed each other our drafts and gave each other notes and like all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Dan's not exaggerating when he says it's a team sport. Like, you have to not only be able to work together, it's really better if you like each other and can be honest with each other, which Dan just did a great job of like moving us through all that. But it was great. So one of the episodes Dan assigned me was one that we built coming out of a story that I shared from when I was in college, of a guy who was a Vietnam vet who shared this really traumatic story with a class I was in, and how all these, like, we're all 17 and 18, and this guy was telling a story about when he was in Vietnam when he was 18, and how awful it was, and how that's just stuck with me. And we didn't use that story exactly, right? But we built a story that had some resonance with that. And then Dan let me write that episode, which was really cool. And then, like I said, Dan fixed it after I wrote it. And then we had to change things because we found out some stuff wasn't exactly right with hospice. And then the actors come in and they bring stuff to it, which they did an amazing job, yeah, actually, in that episode. JR, I think what you were remembering maybe was not Tom Skerritt, but an old friend from Z Nation.
That's right. In.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doc from Z Nation.
Russell Doc. Robinson.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, to the actors, we gave him a speech that was, what did it end up being, Dan? Like 8 minutes or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's about a 4-page speech where he's telling this story of this thing that haunted him his whole life, and it really derailed him, this experience and being unable to reconcile what he had to do when he was in Vietnam wrecked his life, as many veterans have suffered and struggled with the things that they were asked to do and they were supposed to do and they were applauded for doing, that scarred them and that created this burden. And Russell delivers this speech that I think is like a 4-page. I mean, you know, Matt wrote a considerable speech that then doubled in length because of how powerfully it was told. And another Z Nation alumni, Jason McKee, directs that episode. And it was lovely how kind of simple and still, the camera choices were that McKee set up to just let Russell go. And yeah. And it's amazing. I mean, it's really powerful.
We talked a lot in the writer's room about, like, when you go to a theater show, like a live show, but a lot of times you have these really electric speeches. You're not bored at all. And in TV, sometimes they're scared of that kind of thing. But Dan showed us the scene from Jaws, you know, the one where the guy's talking about surviving the shark attack back in the war, and how the camera literally mostly just sits on him the entire time. So we talked a lot about that. Like, how do you make a really compelling electric scene that is someone telling their story? So we're trying to do stuff like that throughout.
That's a great reminder. Yeah. Do you know the scene we're talking about? The Quint speech in Jaws when they're on the boat and they're drinking?
Cold eyes, dead eyes.
Yeah.
Dolls eyes.
Eyes. Perfect. Yes. Of course, JR knows what we're talking about.
Of course he does. He goes and gets in a swimming pool every year to watch Jaws on the big screen.
It's a lake.
Oh, thank a lake. You. Sorry.
Yeah.
But so the idea, JR, was that my premise was we're going to have these really great actors and this really intense, this really powerful, this really life, full of life and wisdom kind of conversations and stories. And it's like, will that work? Can I think of any place where that worked? And I went, oh, what about that speech from Jaws? And so I went back and watched, and I think literally first day in the writer's room, I showed that, didn't I, Matt?
You did, yep. Yep,
yeah.
You showed it to all of us.
Now, Matt, had you seen Jaws before?
Of course I've seen Jaws.
Don't say that when you are famously anti-horror film, and that's one of the great horror films of all time.
Why do you think I'm anti-horror film? I'm scared of sharks now. Yeah, Dan showed it to the writer's room. Like, he had a couple different clips he showed us at different times. I think it was the first day.
It might have been. It was just, I loved it because it was sort of proof of concept that if you just sit in this moment, the audience gets drawn in. Instead of, you know, to paraphrase The Player, where it's cut, 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 cut. You know, where it just, you come to the audience and bombard them. What if you're still and you're intense? Can you draw the audience in?
Yeah.
And of course, Spielberg's a master and Robert Shaw is a genius in that scene and, you know, best of the generation and all that. So, you know, that's all. We're just trying to match that high bar.
But yeah, you want to aim high, right?
But there is something fundamentally true about if you're telling the truth, if it's raw and honest and you don't flinch, you know, we're not covering it up. People might think it's too intense, so let's cut, 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 cut. Nope. we're going to ask you to sit here and you'll be rewarded for sitting here. And so that's kind of our proposition to the audience with Going Home, is that you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised how you're moved. You'll be surprised the memories it stirs up. You'll be surprised by how touching it is. You'll be surprised how relevant it is in some way, whether it's somebody you've lost or you thinking about if it's you and you're going to have to say goodbye, whatever it is. There's a lot of different entry points for various audience members, whether you're 20 or whether you're 80. And I think that was just one of the things that we felt like, well, we just kind of have to be unflinching and honest about how we present this material, or else the audience will go, ah, they don't believe it, but we believe it.
Yeah. So
there
yeah.
you go.
Now I'm curious, Dan, obviously you have seen all of the episodes, cause you had to finish them, but correct. Matt, have you seen any of the episodes yet?
Dan sent me the first three episodes. I don't know. Were they, I don't know if they were the final thing, but they were pretty close.
I think they were. Yeah.
Yeah.
There might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're great. I mean, it's amazing. One of the things I was really struck by visiting the Going Home set and then going out to Legacy Peak that Aaron Burns is shooting, which was my script, was like, this, it's not just the writing that's a team sport. This is communal storytelling.
Oh yeah.
The people who are making the props, the people who are doing the costumes, the camera work, the director, the sets, like all of that is storytelling too. So what's amazing is we put some stuff on the page, and Dan, of course, is the gatekeeper and kind of keeping everything going. So it's really his vision, but it's amazing to see the hard work other people are putting in constantly to try and bring more life, the actors, you know, more interesting things, like to more perfectly tell the story, which is really amazing. So yeah, really gratifying to see. It's also, I don't know if you experienced this, Dan, I'm so stressed out when I'm watching something that I had a hand in. Like, oh, yeah. I'm like, I it's not like when I'm watching a show that I know nothing about and I'm just on the ride, I'm like, oh, that's the way they, okay, that's happening here. And okay, oh, I think that joke landed, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Got
like,
it, yeah.
The editor is like going in my head the whole time.
No, that's funny. Yeah. At a certain point, I think this is from doing it so long, but at a certain point when, all right, picture's locked, move on, that I'm okay that we did our best and
yeah.
and all that. And I mean, I to you know, going home dropped on PureFlix last night at, you know, midnight or something Pacific time. And I dialed the first episode up on my phone. And so I was looking at it from a, how does the sound mix work? How's the whatever
yeah.
you know, on the app? And it's like, the mix is fantastic. It looks great. And I just let it run. I just kind of watched that first episode.
That's
and
funny.
I'm like, I cried like five times, which was hilarious. Like,
was Kara there? Did she keep track?
Well, I'm back in Spokane working. Okay, yeah. She's home with company right now. But but it was funny because, yeah, I know exactly. She was counting though. But it was cool because of there's enough distance, you know, enough distance.
Yeah.
And I have that's acceptance great. That we, you know, we tried as hard as we, this is hard. This is much, this is all I can do. I tried as hard as I can. And we got great, just what you said, great filmmakers, you know, from, you know, Ryan and Vesa, you know, the Key Grip and the Gaffer, those guys are filmmakers. They're not just the guys that put the lights where they're supposed to go and help, you know, make the set work. It's like, they're filmmakers. And the camera department, there's, you know, six people in the camera department. They're all filmmakers. And so everybody is bringing a little something in their area of expertise to make the thing better and to bring it to life and to make it feel real. And that's just such a humbling, it's a humbling thing, you know, to stand there and have, you know, whatever, 50, 60 people plus cast, like just who are really good at their thing, giving you their best to help make the idea you had in your brain come to life. I mean, that's,
yeah.
it's a team sport thing, but there's something even more beautiful than just, it's the football team that came together, you know, kind of a thing, which it's a good analogy. I mean, it's an analogy where everybody's got their specific job and stuff, but it's, I just feel like Going Home is, you know, is a team victory And the show, I think, is a beautiful show. And yeah. And if we had 10 times as much money, we'd do some more stuff. We'd do it a little different, some of it. But this is the essence of the idea. And it's
right.
And as you guys know, and this is what the real blessing of going home is to me, it's very hard to get that spark out of your brain and onto a screen in the form where it feels and looks like you hoped it might. Going home works. And that's amazing. That's that, you know, people might not like it. I can't control that part, whatever. But you know what I mean?
It's
like,
will.
They very well could. But I'm just saying, that's what it turned out to be, what I tried to make.
It's what you wanted.
Always happened. Like Zenith in 2 out of 3. You know? I mean, those were hard. It meant to be funnier, it meant to be scarier, it meant to be this. This is what we meant it to be, I feel like.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really beautiful. And I'm excited for other people to see it for sure. Going Home is on PureFlix, which it's just pureflix.com, right?
Yeah.
FLIX. So yeah, check it out. There's a bunch of other like Sony movies and TV shows and things on there as well. All family friendly stuff. So it's something you can turn on with the kids in the room mostly. Yeah, obviously Going Home deals with some pretty heavy stuff, but we have kids in the show.
Yeah.
And kids, it's something kids have to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I legitimately believe there's stuff in this show that will help people deal with things that's in all of our future, whether it's the loss of a loved one or facing our own mortality. There's some really beautiful wisdom in the show as well. And it's just an entertaining show. It's really well done. So congratulations, Dan.
Thanks, man. Yeah. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Well, Dan, anywhere else you'd want to send people online? I know you have divested yourself of social media.
I have.
Anywhere else you want to send people other than PureFlix?
I think you go to PureFlix on Instagram or Twitter, and you'll find out the latest on those things. You can certainly follow, you know, Charisma Carpenter and Cozy Zulsdorf and Vernon Davis and Tom Skerritt and people like that on social media who lent their considerable talents to the show. So support those folks. I don't know. I guess that's what comes to mind.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
Well, Dan, the last thing we usually do when we interview someone is we share a couple things that are fascinating us this week, typically pop culture stuff, music, books, movies. I mean, really almost anything. If you want to join us for that, I'll make JR go first so that you have time to think about it.
Okay.
Excellent. So I have two things because we're down two hosts. So first is Dan and I were talking before the show started about a book that I have already recommended on the show. But if you have been fascinated particularly by the how the show gets made portion of it, and like when they were talking about how even the people who make the props are part of it, then I just think you will love Blood, Sweat, and Chrome by Kyle Buchanan. It is the oral history of Mad Max Fury Road. And he literally
interviews... One of JR's favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. It is the best movie ever made, like, objectively. So, he interviews everyone from the studio executives who were fighting over funding the movie to the people who made all the insane cars, everything. And it is such an in-depth look at a very singular kind of film. And Dan, who you just heard, is very good at this sort of thing, even was marveling, as everyone does when they watch that movie, how did this even happen? Like, it's like a miracle that it even exists. And once you read the book, you'll say, yeah, I actually understand even less how it happened, because it was like a million miracles had to happen in succession for this thing to actually be in theaters. So I think if you're interested in the production side of film and television, you'll love the book. And then also that was inspired by Dan. This other pick is in honor of Dan, because if you know anything about Dan, you know he has great musical tastes. And so I'm a little nervous right now, Dan, because I'm going to recommend a new album. Okay. I don't usually do this.
All right.
But this is the new album from Dorothy called Gifts from the Holy Ghost.
Wow.
Look at this cover. Look at it.
Wow.
just great. Okay.
You have it on vinyl?
Yeah, I just got it to support her. And
I was like, I didn't even know you had a record player.
I don't, but we've started hanging records. I don't know if you can see them right there. There's a couple of Tifa's page CXVI and a little Motive Spear over there. Anyway.
It looks like we have the same decorator, JR.
Yeah, right? My wife does all your stuff too. That's awesome.
Dan's entire wall behind him is just like pictures of the Beatles and like album covers and things like that all in the wall.
So all my wall of inspiration, which is mostly musical stuff. It's like, I want to make a show that makes me feel like Quadrophenia by The Who. What show would that be?
Well, Dorothy is a blues rocker, and this is her third studio album, and it is just terrific. Awesome. So I don't know that she is a believer. I don't know Gifts from the Holy Ghost. When her album was titled that, I was surprised. But it's a terrific album, and there are definitely some really interesting spiritual themes going on in the lyrics. So, yeah, I think it's a great album. I've been listening to it basically on repeat since it dropped, so... That's Gifts from the Holy Ghost by Dorothy.
I love that it's Holy Ghost, not like Holy
Spirit. Oh, I know, right? Like very, I was like, okay, there is a very specific choice being made here.
Yeah. I'll check that out. That's awesome.
My pick this week is called, it's a novella called A Psalm for the Wild Built by Becky Chambers. And this is a science fiction novella. It takes place on like a far off moon that's been settled at some point. And the main character is a priest named Dex who wanders from town to town giving people tea. So Dex sets up like a little tea shop and then people come and share their feelings and thoughts and ask questions about the gods, et cetera, et cetera. And part of what happens is while Dex is off in the middle of the wild somewhere, they come across a robot. And robots achieved sentience like 100 years ago. And everyone was like, oh, no, we accidentally enslaved you. We didn't know you were sentient. And the robots were like, yeah, we're leaving. Bye. Don't try to find us. And all the humans were like, shoot, we feel bad. That is not what we meant to do. So they let him go. Okay. So this is the first robot to come back and have like human contact again. And the robot is saying like, what do humans want? So this priest is like, you can't even answer that question. So it's this really interesting kind of philosophical conversation between this monk, this priest, and this robot who are trying to discover the meaning of life together. I really enjoyed it. Pretty beautiful.
It's like that old joke. The monk, the priest, and the robot walk into a bar.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
That's the end?
No,
I was waiting for the punchline.
I love it. Exactly. Well, the robot says, 10101 01, and I don't know. That's
funny, though. It's a good setup so far. You just need the punchline.
I thought you were setting up the joke.
No, yeah, that's right. It does remind me of that one about the, the one about the monk and the hot dog vendor, right?
No.
Where he walks up to the hot dog vendor and he says, make me one with everything.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I thought you were going to talk about the priest and the rabbit that walked into the bar. And the rabbit says, I'm pretty sure I'm a typo.
Nice. There's a million.
Oh, man. So many. Dan, what do you got? Anything interesting you in?
I've got there's a new series that just dropped on Hulu called Pistol.
Oh,
and yes. I cannot wait to watch this.
It's a limited series about the British punk rock band, the Sex Pistols.
Oh, nice.
And it's directed by Danny Boyle, who did, Trainspotting, among a million other amazing things.
He's an up-and-coming director, right? I hear he's going to be big.
And it's like, on one hand, you go, how do you do this documentary style, history of the Sex Pistols and not have it turn out like a Motley Crue biopic? Well, one, you had Danny Boyle to direct it, and two, you spread it over 6 hours, so you got a little more breathing room. And it's pretty good. These are really hard shows to do, I think, because they span the time, and it's like, well, that guy doesn't look like Steve Jones or Johnny Rotten, or well, enough he does, and you get into it. But it's well written, and it's really from this distance, which is what 45 years or something, it was 1977 when the Pistols released their only album, which is fascinating that they're as influential as they were. And it's funny to listen to the record too, because it's mostly just really great rock and roll, almost power pop even, with, you know, these political sneering vocals over the top from Lydon, John Lydon. But it's really interesting, and it's interesting of how art can disrupt. It's interesting to kind of get a little bit of the social context of where England was, you know, at the time, and where the youth were, and just also how something can burn really bright and really fast, you know, it burn out really fast. And there's a lot of stuff in it, you know, because it's obviously it's pre-social media and all that stuff, but it's, you know, there's some cult of personality insights that are fascinating and relevant to today. And, you know, if you know anything about that music or that scene, it's just wildly entertaining.
I can't wait. I saw it come up and I was excited to watch it, but now I'm even more after going home, of course. But
yeah. Well, and they're very different shows. Very
trade off episodes. Do like an episode of Going Home, then Pistol, then
that would cause you vertebrae damage from whiplash, I think. Yeah.
I'm sad about mortality, but a little bit hopeful. Now I'm angry at the government again. Now yeah.
So my last thing about mortality, real quick, is the Rolling Stones yesterday in Madrid kicked off their Stones 60 tour.
Oh my
They've
gosh.
They've been doing it for 60 years. And they, of course, Charlie Watts, the original drummer, passed this last winter. And so they've continued on with his protege, a wonderful drummer named Steve Jordan. But here's the comment. So they're in their 60th year, and the Stones had the cheek to play for the first time on stage a 1966 song called Out of Time. And I'm
nice.
They've got it. You're 80 years old and you're amazing. Up on the stage doing these great songs. And there's just something so fascinating to me. It's like, you know, Keith Richards said at one point, it's like, well, we're just going to see how far we can take the train, you know? And really their idols originally were bluesmen. And you may recall the famous story of John Lee Hooker playing a show on a Tuesday as an 80-year-old man and dying before his Saturday show. And amazing. You go, well, you just do what you do, and you do it to the best you can, and then when your time's up, you go. But no surrender at
right,
all.
Right.
So there's an interesting lesson. The Stones have long since been the lascivious bad boys of the 60s and the 70s, and there's now they've got to be something else. They're 80-year-old artists who are conveying and sharing a gift with an audience, and certainly in Europe right now with what's going on with the Ukraine and so on, there's got to be something liberating and satisfying about the relief of, hey, let's just hear some great music and be together in a community. And there's just something when you've got 60,000 people, you know, screaming, start me up, or, you know, I can't get no satisfaction. It's like, okay, well, we're all the same till this song's over. And that makes me feel better. So there's right. something interesting about how the message and the medium sort of transform through the length of this 60 years as a band. You know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway,
that's amazing.
Played out of time. I just thought that was, well, they're in on the joke.
Right. That's amazing. Awesome. Well, Dan, thank you so much. It is, it's always always a pleasure to have you on, and I think we should not wait 7 years again.
Well, thank you, Jared. No, it's great. When you do your All Mad Max episode, I want to come in and
perfect. Okay, we'll deal.
We'll talk pros and cons of Thunderdome, and then just
yes.
keep going. Because it's too easy to hate that movie. You got to get.
You're right. No, you're right.
Look deeper.
again, we were talking before the show. What can you tell us about the other projects you have coming down the pipe?
Well, I can tell you definitively about a great, great show called Live and Local. And that okay. show actually premieres July 7th. I'll come back and talk about that if you want.
Sure, absolutely.
July 7th on PureFlix again. And it's an alt comedy about kind of a faux documentary about a morning Christian radio show. And it's Live and Local. It's a local-owned station. And it's a love letter to morning radio. And the station is K-Hug. K-Hug with two G's, FM 109. And And Dave Coulier from Full House and Emily Pendergrast, who's on Veep, play the morning co-host, and a brilliant actor named Pat Cashman, who did Almost Live and actually shows up on a Z Nation episode. If you remember the We Interrupt This Broadcast episode where it's kind of the day one flashback where the zombies hit the news station. I don't know if you remember that one. Well, he played the news anchor in episode 9 of season 4. So I've known Pat for a long time. He was a star on Almost Live in Seattle that ended up on Comedy Central. So you got those three in addition to Kendra Ann Sherrill, who plays kind of the intern producer who gets thrown into the middle of it. But it's like a fake radio show with real guests. So we have, you know, John Cooper from Skillet is a guest. Dallas Jenkins, who's the producer of The Chosen. You know, Dustin Nickerson, who's a great comedian. They come on our fake show as guests and get interviewed. And then part of the show is them on the air doing this local radio show. And then part of it is behind the scenes, kind of office style workplace comedy about that. But it's very funny to, you know, I did morning radio for a year, and it's a weird industry. And so the people who get up at 3:30 in the morning to sit alone in a room with another person and talk into a mic and be your best friend when you wake up takes a special breed of cat to do that gig. And it's funny because that's a thing that they're really good at and often not good at anything else. And so it's kind of this weird miracle that this person has found, hey, I can be on the radio, and when I just talk to this mic, I'm your best friend. And I start your day every day with my morning show and my little trivia and my fun stuff. And so that's really the world we get to explore on Live and Local. And it's a pretty funny show, and there's a lot of fun surprises. And like I said, it's a love letter to local morning radio.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah, we'd love to have you back on to hear more about that.
Awesome.
All right. Well,
all right, friends.
Thank you, Dan.
Our guest today has been Dan Merchant, the one and the only. The new show Going Home with staff writer Matt Michaelides is available on PureFlix to stream right now as you're listening. So make sure you check it out, and then reach out to Matt on social media to let him know what you think so Matt can convey that to Dan.
Perfect.
Yeah. But again, Dan, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Good luck, both of you, with the show. Here's hoping for a season 2. And I personally cannot wait to watch. I was thinking I was going to have time before the show today to at least smash down one, and I just didn't quite get there. So probably going to go do that right now. So
I love it. Thanks, JR. Great seeing you. Good to see you, Matt. We'll talk soon, guys.
Thanks, Dan.